Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis, and today we're going to talk about how to make sure student loan debt does not affect your retirement plans. So I think this is interesting for a variety of reasons. We've got really two different types of people that are worried about student loans affecting their retirement. I think there's like the 20s, 30s, 40s crowd that maybe wants to retire early, is maybe interested in financial independence, or wants to make sure that they're not going to be inhibited from retiring at a normal age because of their student loan debt. So they're thinking kind of into the future. Maybe they are interested in early retirement, but they think that maybe that might not be possible with their loans, right? But they are at the beginning of their careers, you might have a significant income, you're doing pretty well. And then there's the kind of other group of folks that tends to be parent plus borrowers, but not always. This is a group of people that's in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And, you know, a lot of times this group of folks has parent plus loans that are really large because of their kids' education. But sometimes there's just debt from their own educations. And sometimes it's the combo of the two. For that latter group, for people that are 50s, 60s, or 70s, that group of folks, I think, sometimes thinks that, well, I'm just never going to be able to retire, period, because of my student loans. And that is not true, I can emphatically say. So there's a couple, you know, positive things I want to talk about first before we get into why there is a gray student loan crisis, is what I'll call this. The gray student loan crisis is just basically the fact that student loan borrowers are getting older and older and older just because just a lot of different reasons that we'll explain in today's show, but, you know, student debt's growing exponentially among folks that are older, more so than people that are younger. So if we think about what are the positives, if you have a lot of student loan debt, you have some level of education by definition, right? Now, you might not have a degree, that's not great. But the folks that don't have a degree typically might have, you know, $10,000, $20,000 of loans. A lot of times that debt's in default. These are folks that more are probably on the mid to lower end of the income scale. So that's a different problem. That's a serious problem. It's certainly impactful. In general, folks listening to this podcast tend to owe modest five figures in student loans and up. So that's kind of the angle that I'm going to be approaching this from. So if you're in that group and you've got at least some level of education out of your student debt, you probably are either making more money than somebody without that level of education, or you have more job security compared to somebody without that level of education, or maybe both. So if we think about a lot of the people in our community, a lot of folks are making high five figures, low six figures, sometimes mid six figures, you know, for our dentist and physician clients. You know, and the debt's significant too, right? But what do we know? That the debt, at worst, is just an income tax. It's just you're losing 10% of your income, but you can do a bunch of tricks. That is why people hire us for student loan consults, and that gets that payment way down. You know, you can also decide between repayment and forgiveness, right? That's another reason people hire us, is just kind of analyzing the numbers between the different paths. And you also need to set aside money for the possibility that you might owe an income tax bomb in the future, right? So how does all of that, you know, go together in terms of not worrying about your student loans in retirement? Well, you know, keep in mind that because you've got this greater job security, let's take a social worker, for example. That social worker might only make $40,000 a year, $50,000 a year, something like that, maybe even less. But what we can say is that social worker is going to have much, much greater job security than somebody without any college education, most likely on average, right? You might say, well, that doesn't matter, right? No, it does, because a social worker is probably going to maybe work for a public employer, perhaps. That social worker probably has access to public service loan forgiveness, we hope. Also has access to, hopefully, again, this is not true for all social workers, but hopefully good health insurance benefits. So there's downside protection, good benefits in general, hopefully some decent vacation time. Hopefully it's a good quality of life type of job versus you're working in the construction industry as a contractor, and if you slip and fall, you can go hire an attorney to try to get some money out of some shell LLC company, but good luck. Those are just some of the reasons that I'm talking about. The positives are simply that you have more tools at your disposal than you think you do. Okay, you have a lot more tools at your disposal than you think you do. And why am I saying that? So if you have this greater than average income, the benefits of you saving for retirement are greater because you're getting a bigger tax write-off for putting money into sheltered accounts. You also have more income than average individually and maybe even as a family to address expensive problems like childcare or your furnace breaking, your AC going bust. Those are things that you can handle much easier than somebody that's got a low level of education. You can get approved for credit a lot easier. Your education level in many cases helps you navigate Byzantine systems and complex, you know, problems, even things that you don't enjoy doing. You're more capable of doing a lot of these things that contribute to having a lower interest rate on your mortgage or better protection if you become disabled or pass away prematurely in terms of your family having benefits, right? Or, you know, a lot of times people with greater education levels are more likely to have access to a 401k where you're going to get a higher contribution limit than somebody that's limited to only an IRA. So there's a lot of positives going on as to why, you know, your education, even if you have a lot of the debt, is helping you get closer to retirement. So one thing to think about, right? What is one of the original warnings in the Old Testament of thousands of years, right? Thou shalt not covet. Comparison is the thief of joy, I think is another quote I've heard. I'm not sure where to attribute that from. Comparison is what makes people really frustrated and unhappy a lot of times, I think. Not to say that, you know, if you're going through something that it's not legitimate. I don't mean that. I mean that a dental specialist making $400,000 a year with $600,000 of student loan debt is far more likely to compare herself to another dental specialist also making $400,000 a year with no student loan debt than comparing herself to a, let's say, a chiropractor or something like that with no student loan debt. Now, the chiropractor maybe is making, let's say, $80,000 in this case, no student loans, but the dental specialist is making $400,000 with $600,000 of student loans. If you just think about income-based repayment and the dental specialist loses 10% of her income, mathematically, she's better off than somebody that has no student loan debt. And by the way, a chiropractor making $80K is much better off even with a lot of student loan debt than a, you know, let's say somebody without an education working as a, you know, supervisor at a retailer or something making $35K a year. And, you know, I don't mean to say too that there's any hierarchy among professions on their incomes based on their value. That's also not what I mean. What I'm simply showing is regardless of what your degree is, regardless of what your education level is, I hope you enjoy it. And I hope that because of that education, it's very likely that you have more tools to deal with saving for retirement and accomplishing your goals than you would otherwise. So now I want to talk about the gray student loan crisis and why specifically student loan debt is becoming a bigger and bigger problem with retirement. And then, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the ways that we can deal with that. Let's just cover a statistic first. So if I asked you how much has student debt changed for borrowers under the age of 34 over the past 6 years, what would you guess? How much greater is the total amount of debt? So just kind of throw out a guess right in your head. How much greater is the total debt owed by this group of under 34 borrowers? So it's actually about unchanged, which is interesting. So now, what if I said how much has student loan debt grown among the over 62 crowd just since 2017? So keep in mind, right, we've got 3.5 years of zero interest going on for this group. You know, literally zero interest accrual, right, for the majority of that period in question. How much greater is their debt as a group? And the answer is 2.2 times as high. So in 2017, over 62 folks had about $50 billion of student loan debt, and today they have about $120 billion. I think that the numbers are several hundred billion for under 34 and several hundred billion. It's about the exact same number for the under 34 crowd. Now, for people that are kind of 30s to 40s, their debt, total debt owed grew. And then the people that are, you know, in their 50s, their debt grew even more. And then the 50s to 60s grew even more than that. And then the over 62 crowd, it grew the most rapid of all. So what that tells you is that there's exponential growth of the amount of student loan debt among older and older and older people. Now, society is graying in general, but I don't think that's necessarily what's going on here. I think that there's a couple things going on with this. So I think one thing is people tend to get started later and later and later in life than they have ever before. So I think a lot of times people will take a gap year, right? And then go to undergrad. And then maybe undergrad takes them 5 or 6 years. And then maybe they take another gap year. And then maybe you do a master's degree because it's really difficult to get into fill in the blank, medical school, the PA school that you want to go to, really difficult to get into your in-state law school, whatever it is, right? So a lot of people might do sort of a process of trying to find themselves for a little bit after they're done with undergrad. And so then maybe a lot of people are starting, instead of starting, you know, right on time or starting medical school at 22, maybe you're starting at 24 or 25, something like that, right? And then you get through with med school, well, you do your residency. Well, now you know, you've got to do that extra training on top of that. So you've got to do your fellowship. And so you, maybe folks are not getting out into the professional world that they are ending up in with their education levels, you know, until a later date. You know, we certainly see this in some ways. We'll see people that will go do one profession for a few years and then they'll go back to school. And that's actually, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's, in a lot of cases, it's the right choice. It's a good thing. What's happening, I think, is just people are building up more and more and more debt, and they're also letting, you know, more and more interest accumulate. In school deferment, interest still grows, right? Even with this new IDR plan Biden's proposing, interest is still going to grow while you're in school, unless the interest is subsidized, but very few loans are subsidized. Most of them are unsubsidized or grad plus or parent plus. So this delayed start, I think, explains some of it. I also think that the soaring cost of higher education impacts some of it. So I think that, you know, college costs have certainly exploded and continue to grow. And Parent Plus is sort of this safety valve where no one has to say no to their kid's college dream, which is a good thing. But if you think about it, if Parent Plus did not exist and you have four kids that got into Notre Dame, let's say, and they all want to go to Notre Dame, and you have a couple hundred thousand of equity in your home, and you've got a middle-class job, and you've got a little bit of money in retirement, and that's it. Well, Notre Dame might mean you need to take out $150,000 for 4 years for each kid. So you're going to need $600,000 of debt. There's no bank in the country that would agree to that. And so then you would have to say no to one or more of your kids on their dream of going to Notre Dame because the money just wouldn't be there. But right now, with the Parent Plus world existing as it is, Notre Dame raises their expenses every single year, maybe faster than inflation. I don't know if that's for sure, by the way. I'm just speculating, but you know, that's probably what they do. I'm saying that because I've heard some rumors, like you might think that some schools would have been the biggest people fighting back against capping Parent Plus, but it was actually like the University of Alabama, Notre Dame, like these brand name schools that like normal everyday families want to, middle-class families, right, want to send their kids to, and then people have to take out a ton of debt to do so. And if, you know, if you cap Parent Plus, then suddenly you don't have unlimited ability to charge what you want. And honestly, these brand name schools would have to cut their prices significantly. So I think that's part of it. Parent Plus is part of it, but it's also not all of it. You know, I think too, older folks are needing to work later for a variety of reasons. Certainly, if you are coming from a lower income background, then you're going to have to work longer. I think that folks are interested in just making sure they don't have any regrets. And so, I mean, we certainly see a lot of career changers that have worked with us in the past, like people that have done one career and gone to another career. You've got to take out student loans to do that. Maybe in the past, and again, this is not so much saying this is right or wrong, but I think in the past, you probably would have had a pretty hard time going to law school, dental school, medical school in your 50s. But we've got a lot of clients that have done that. And why? It's because, you know, a bank would probably not want to give loans to an individual of that age going into that profession just because of the amount of years left statistically that you'd have to practice. Now, you could probably, there's probably been people for a long time that have self-funded that, and also all you have to find is one place that'll take you. But now the federal government will cover that in full no matter how expensive it is. So you've got a greater opportunity available to folks that want to pursue this path. Clearly, debt is going up a lot for older individuals, right? And I think the other reason it's going up is as people get older and older and older, their period of going to school was the most expensive ever, if that makes sense. So if like dental school costs are rising at like 6% a year, 7% a year, you know, every, you know, sort of cohort that goes through is getting more and more and more expensive debt. Now, you'd think that that would show up in the under 34 borrower statistics, but it doesn't. So that's maybe not as good of a hypothesis, but it's just a guess. And I think that, too, the lack of ability to do bankruptcy impacts this because there's sort of a selection bias problem going on where, like, a lot of people in their, you know, in their 20s and 30s successfully pay down their student debt and paid off in full. A lot of people are done with paying off student loan debt in their 40s. And that's something that we celebrate if that's the right decision for you and your family. But individuals that are student loan borrowers in their 50s, there's a little bit of a like dependent data problem, right? It's like, if you are a student loan borrower in your 50s, why? Well, a lot of folks would have paid off that debt before then. And so therefore, you know, you still have debt. Well, a lot of times it's because of things like not being able to pay. A lot of people do forbearance and deferment, and that compounds. And so the, you know, impact of compounding interest over time because of exponential growth, it shows up when borrowers are older. So a lot of different theories as to why student loan debt is becoming such a big problem with people being older and older. So let's talk about how that doesn't have to impact your retirement. So you have heard about the 4% rule. 4% rule is just if you have, you know, basically if you say, well, another way to do it is to take your spending and times it by 25. So let's say you need $100,000 a year to live off. Multiply by 25, you need $2.5 million to retire. Now, it's really not that simple because you've got things like pensions and Social Security and the ability to do part-time work and spouses that might work or partners that might work. So a lot of times what happens is people claim Social Security at the second they can get it and they get $1,200 a month inflation adjusted for the rest of their life. A lot of times that's a huge mistake. So instead, people could wait till 70, maybe you get $3,000 a month for the rest of your life. Well, if you do that, instead of needing $100,000 every year, maybe you'll only need $65,000, right? And so if you take $65,000, multiply that by 25, instead of needing $2.5 million, you need significantly less, right? Maybe like 1.8. I'm just going to throw a guess off the top of my head there. You can drastically reduce the amount that you need to retire just by like reducing the amount of money you need in income to retire. And that's done by things like smart tax planning, smart Social Security strategies, smart usage of strategic part-time work or your spouse continuing to work. And what does your debt structure look like? Is there any downsizing opportunities you can do? So I'll give you another example. Let's say you have, you know, worked a long time and you've got $1 million house. It's a really nice house and you've got $500,000 of equity in that house, meaning that you've got a $500,000 mortgage. Well, that monthly payment that you have is still the same monthly payment as when you bought the house, most likely. What you can do is you could re-refinance that $500K mortgage. And that would have been a smart call 2 or 3 years ago with interest rates really low. Maybe you could have cut your payment in half or a third, and then now you need less money to retire, right? Because you need less income because you have lower expenses. That's one of the strategies, is like watch your expenses and knock down that number that you have to have from your investment portfolio as much as possible. Now, with student loan debt, there's a lot of ways that you can get that required payment lower. And I'm mentioning mortgages, I'm talking about student loans. The big thing that will slow down your retirement is big fixed expenses and surprise expenses. So I'm going to give an example of each. The scary, unexpected expense would be like my son's $1.7 million medical bill. For those of you who don't know, you know, my son was born at 29 weeks. He went through multiple life-saving surgeries. We almost lost him. Luckily, he's doing fine today. But the consequence of all the 4 months of care in the hospital that he got was, and all those surgeries, was like $1.7 million in like gross bill that we got. Then the insurance, because we had that insurance, knocked it down some, and then they covered basically all of it almost. So, I mean, that's a tremendous blessing. And that's the kind of thing that can really freak people out, like in retiring, right? It's like, I'm going to lose my health insurance. This is the health insurance that I'm used to. So maybe I have that health insurance that covered that massive expense for my son, and I'm thinking about retiring. Well, shoot, can I do that? Let's say I have a chronic condition or somebody in my family that has expensive medical needs, and my existing insurance does a pretty good job covering that. Well, there's this fear of the unknown, right? That if I'm going to retire, well, what am I going to do with my, you know, how am I going to cover all these surprise expenses? And what happens if, you know, I've got what I think I need for retirement, but now the hospital calls and they want 200 grand because of some chronic condition that my insurance doesn't want to cover. And suddenly I don't have enough to retire. That's one example of the surprise, unexpected expense. Another example, would more minor example, but still significant, would be we had all of the old cast iron drains like rusted out in our house. And we started having all kinds of leaks everywhere. And it was terrible. It was several thousand dollars. We had to get it done because, you know, you got drains backing up all over the house. It's not what you want, right? And so that was a big unexpected expense that punched us in the face. And so you think, oh, I only need $60,000 to live off of, but then you have some sort of expense like that. It can throw off that retirement expectation. So the other big hit is these big fixed expenses. So think about, you know, your recurring expenses, right? Your mortgage, your car payment, your student loan payment, if you have a fixed private loan payment. So those are the other big thing that hurts your ability to retire. Some of the ideas and how to be flexible with that, you know, if you buy a fairly new vehicle, for example, right before retirement, probably won't need to replace that for a while. If you downsize your house from that example earlier, $1 million house with $500K of equity, if you downsize from that to a smaller house, you've got no mortgage anymore. So you've freed up that fixed expense. Now, how big of a deal does that make? let's say that you've got, let's see if I can do some quick math. Let's say you've got a $20,000 per year mortgage, right? That 4% rule, which is basically saying you need 25 times that spending. So you, in other words, you would need a $500K portfolio to spend $20K every year. You could literally eliminate needing $500,000 extra in your portfolio just by downsizing, because you're freeing up this $20K a year mortgage that you no longer have to provide from your portfolio. And now you're able to retire much, much, much sooner because you have a smaller amount of money that you need to be able to retire. So a couple other strategies behind this, right? So let's say that you're like, I really want to retire at 50. And let's say that you think you can't do it, but you've got some decent retirement savings, some decent savings in the cash, good job, stable, everything. And you've got a lot of student loans. So kind of the strategy, I think, would be to say, how do I figure out my finances so that I can wait to claim Social Security? How do I get health insurance provided to me that's heavily subsidized through something like the ACA? And the way you do this is have your income limited to a certain percent of the poverty line, which you can actually pretty well control if you're retired. You can work a certain amount of hours. You can do Roth conversions to generate phantom income. You can do a lot of really interesting things to basically get health insurance for almost free. So in case you're interested in this, this is the cost-sharing rule, cost-sharing for silver plans. If you look it up, Kaiser Family Foundation has an interesting explanation for this. Essentially, what it does is these silver plans are built with the idea that a certain percent of your health expenses are going to be covered by the plan. And so essentially what happens is if you have a certain type of income, then you can make too much to qualify for Medicaid, because not everybody accepts Medicaid, right? So a lot of folks, if they can avoid it, would possibly want to avoid Medicaid just to have more choices for healthcare. So you make enough where you're not qualifying for Medicaid, but you don't make too much where you don't have great subsidies. And so basically it works out to, you get like copays of like $5 and $10 and deductibles of like $500, and your premium is almost nothing. And so you could really get rid of your health insurance expense pretty well and have like Blue Cross Blue Shield and retirement pretty easily. But I find that a lot of people really don't understand how that bureaucracy works. It's very similar to student loan debt, honestly. So let's say you've got your health, you know, insurance costs controlled between your 50 and 65th birthday. At 65, you're going to get a Medicare and a Medigap plan to have no health expenses that way. So now you've just got to figure out, you know, housing, cars, trips, the big unexpected expenses, that kind of thing. So if you can figure out the house stuff, like I've talked about downsizing, or, you know, maybe you get, you know, I'm not going to suggest roommates because that's not very popular, right? But you can do a lot of different things with house stuff. And the thing is if you don't want to make those changes, that's also okay. It might just mean that you want to work a little longer because you enjoy it. So figure out ways to control that housing expense. Now you've got to figure out, how do I control the car expense and any other big expenses? So the car expense, maybe you're just trying to buy a, you know, a new vehicle that's, you know, a very reliable Toyota Camry that's going to last you 10, 15 years. And then you're going to plan on taking out a chunk of your portfolio to buy another new vehicle. And that's probably going to work for most people. Now, if you're a car person, that's okay. It might mean that you need to make the choice between working and not working, right? Working longer or working shorter and retiring early. And so those are a lot of the big expenses. So honestly, if you can figure out health insurance, cars, and housing, you're very close to being able to retire right away, honestly, if you can just figure out those three things. Now, what about the student loans? That's the big anvil that we haven't talked about. So there's a lot of strategic choices that you can make here. So let's say that you make a lot of money and you are trying to figure out ways to put off making income-based repayment, because you know in retirement that you're going to drop from making $150,000 a year to having a taxable income of like $50,000 or something like that. Now you might say, oh, that sounds terrible. That's actually not the case. You can strategically have a low taxable income for a whole variety of reasons. So you can take out high cost basis stock when you're selling that stock to generate low taxable income there. You can pull money out of Roth accounts, or, you know, only a small amount out of certain traditional IRA accounts or taxable 401k accounts, savings. There's all kinds of different things that you can do to have your income that's going to be lower in retirement than what it is while you're working, right? And so if you're paying income-based repayment and you don't, your sole goal is just, how do I minimize the burden of my student loans? Then here's some different examples of what you could do. So let's say that Biden comes out with a policy that says we're going to allow people a hold harmless, no questions asked forbearance option that we're adding on after the student loan pause. And let's say he does it for a year. So if you're a high income individual, you can make your high income based repayment amount, Or you can say, well, I know that my future payments on this other income-based plan will be lower, so I'm going to not pay on that, and I'm going to do a strategic forbearance. I'm going to take that full optional forbearance that Biden's offering so that I can have more money to save for retirement. Now, let's say that that forbearance is over with. We'll see what happens after the pause ends, but what it was before the pause is you could call up the servicers for any reason at all and just say, I want a year-long forbearance, and they'd grant it to you. Now, is that something that is irresponsible? Should you do that? Is it taking advantage of the system? Frankly, it doesn't matter. The rules are the rules. If you can do it and you don't have to lie to do it and make any kind of false statement, then it's something that you can do. For example, say you wanted to maximize your forbearance usage because you're trying to put off your income-based repayments to save up and build up that nest egg that you could have enough money to have your number to retire with. If you think about the number that you need, you'll get there faster if you have a higher savings rate and it's not going towards debt, right? So you might not know this, but you get 3 years of forbearance on student loans, direct student loans, before you've run out of forbearance that you can't ask for more. What people don't know is you can consolidate and get an additional 3 years of forbearance. You can get 6 years of forbearance just by asking for it, basically. If you add on Biden's forbearance, that's a year. Add on the COVID forbearance, you could be in not paying on your loans for 10 years. And that doesn't include deferment. So you can also do different kinds of deferment and pay nothing. So for example, let's say that you took out a bunch of Parent Plus loans, and let's say that you wanted to try to defer those. You can do those. You have the option of deferring or not deferring when you take out Parent Plus loans. So you might say, or you can also defer if you go into school for yourself. So you might say, well, I'm going to go strategically add on another master's degree on for an online program just because I want to put off payments with in-school deferment for 4 more years. Now, if your payment is, 10% of your income anyway, you're going to be making that payment no matter what. And you're making, let's say you're making $200,000 a year as like a sales executive, but you think that's going to go away completely after retirement and you're going to make $50,000 a year and you're trying to suck away as much money as you possibly can, it might make sense to sign up for some online master's program that's basically, maybe if you find it interesting, maybe it's like medieval art history or something, right? And you're basically doing it because, one, you find it interesting, but two, you can defer those loans to put off making payments. You might say, that's terrible. Oh my gosh, that's so immoral. The rules are the rules, right? Like Congress people made these rules. So if they didn't want them to exist, then they should go and change them. You can defer for that reason for a lot. There's also other kinds of deferment, right? There's like if you're deployed, you can defer. If you, heaven forbid, have cancer or some serious illness, you can defer. There's a lot of different ways to put off payments through different kinds of deferment. There's also economic hardship deferment. There's a lot of different things that you can do to put off making those payments strategically. Let's say you've successfully put the loans off as much as you possibly can. What about student loans and retirement? How would that work? Well, again, income-based repayment, right? Social Security income a lot of times is partially or, in some cases fully excluded almost from having to pay based on your income. So you might have this very low income, and with this new poverty line that they're coming out with, it's going to be 225% of the poverty line. For a lot of people, seniors in retirement, throw that on with their Social Security income that might be not looked at as closely, and you're going to be having to pay maybe, $100, $200, $300 a month in a lot of cases for people that are making five figures in retirement of taxable income. Now, if you file taxes separately, like this new rebate plan supposedly will allow people to do, and this is also, paid as this too. You might be able to make 50 or 60K with one spouse and 50 or 60K with a second spouse, and you're making 100, 120K of income a year. That's a really comfortable retirement compared to what most people get. And you're not having student loans impact that at all because you're paying, 100, 200 a month. I mean, that's a cable bill. Most retirees pay for cable without defaulting on it. So let's say that you have Parent Plus loans and you want to retire, but you feel like I'm never going to retire camp. Remember what I said about Social Security. The key is to put off Social Security as long as you possibly can. Same thing for a pension. Put off claiming that pension till the date that you get the biggest benefit, and then try to survive from whenever you retire until the date that you can draw that pension with your savings. So if you have enough savings so let's say that you have calculated you're going to run down from $1 million to $500,000 going from age 63 to 70 or something like that. And then you still got 500K left over that would produce 20K of income. Now let's say you're getting 30K a year from Social Security. So that 50K a year of income, if that's enough to last the rest of the way for you, then you're good. Then even though you feel like I'm never going to retire, you know, I spend all this money, I want to go on these trips. Life is short, right? Life can end at any moment. And, you know, frankly, some loopholes are worth it to have the life that you want sooner. I think a lot of people have realized with the pandemic, right, that just, and it might not even be an unexpected early death. It might just be like everybody's locked inside for 2 years and you can't go anywhere. You can't live a normal life. So that opportunity that you have to go experience whatever it is your dream is, maybe you should do it. Maybe you should do it a lot faster than you think. No, I'm not the person that says go do it tomorrow sometimes. You need to have a plan, right? But if you do have a plan, you're going to be surprised with what you're capable of. So that's to the 50s, 60s, 70s, I'm never going to retire camp. Let's say that you're in the 30s or 40s, I'd like to retire early and be financially independent world. I would just say build up a nest egg as much as you can in a variety of sources. So brokerage account, savings account, retirement accounts, have a variety of different sources of wealth that you're growing. If you want to add real estate to that or a primary residence, you can. And you know, the idea is decide if you want to keep doing what you're doing because you enjoy it and it's pretty decent. Decide if you want to level up what you're doing by becoming a business owner and just taking a higher share of profits of your labor, doing what you're already doing, if that's an applicable thing for you to do. Or decide if you want to do something entirely different just because life is short and you want to do it. And then build up that nest egg and just give yourself options. So the other thing is remember that retiring early is not necessarily something that you might do forever either. You might also think about a sabbatical. So an example of a sabbatical is you figure out how long you can be away from a field and still maintain your credentials and your ability to be employed. And then you plan that, basically. You plan 6 months away, travel Europe, travel Latin America, Asia, whatever it is that you want to do, hike the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Rim Trail, whatever it is that your dream is, and hike Everest, you know, or climb Everest, I guess I should say, whatever it is your dream is, and then plan to go back and pick up where you left off. You might say, I can't do that. That's a terrible idea. The reality is the unemployment rate for people with a professional degree is like 2 or 3%. Of that group of people that is unemployed, if you think about, well, how, this is going to sound odd, but you might say, of that group of people that's unemployed, you know, are you, like, how weird is your reason, right? So, like, in other words, you know, our employer's going to look at you and they're going to say, oh, you took 6 months off, you're unemployable. No, of course not. You know, somebody who's unemployed for, I don't know, other reasons besides that, maybe they have a harder time. Maybe they've been away out of the workforce for a longer time because of health-related stuff, or maybe they took time away for childcare or something. If you just take 6 months off or something like that, nobody's going to care about that. They'll hire you back somewhere for sure. So sabbaticals, I think, are a good thing to do if you need to as well. Another thing I want to talk about is just mental health stuff. So this is, you know, more and more present, more so than it's ever been in society. And I think there's a lot of reasons why. I think we look at our phones several hours a day. I think that's pretty shocking and scary to have that stare back at me. Like, my weekly screen report is always like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to account for this when I'm dead? You know, this is terrible. And I think that everybody sees the filtered versions of everybody else's best life, or the, you know, just amazing content that just shows the most souped up version of life you can imagine. And then you go back to your mundane usual, like, I've got to go drive and get my gas and pick the kids up from daycare kind of routine. And it's like, oh man, my life, you know, I think that's part of it. I think just like what everybody went through with the pandemic was really awful. I think just, you know, again, not having that community of people in your life that you're used to was really tough. So I think there's a lot more like mental health, anxiety, depression, hopelessness, loneliness than there has been maybe ever. You know, if I'm kind of thinking, what if you're going through that? Like, do you, you know, how does that impact you if you have student loans and you're thinking about retirement, like, and all that stuff? So I would say, you've got to always prioritize your life over your loans. So that's always extremely important. You are more important by far than anything related to money. So if you need to, you know, look into short-term disability, or you need to take FMLA, or you need to figure out, like, talk to your boss and take a risk, you know, to take some time away, or you need to quit your job for a little bit for a few months while you're working your mental health, go to counseling, go on a long backpacking trip with your friends, go on a girl's trip to Europe or something, right? whatever your thing is, like take care of yourself, take care of that anxiety, depression, spend the money on counseling, right? Your student loans can always go into forbearance. They'll be there when you get back. And that, you mean, it's, oh, that's terrible, right? No, you don't need to act like your loans are this anchor that's going to ruin your life and you've got to live like your hair's on fire to get rid of them, right? That's kind of, I don't know, emotionally manipulative, I think, to tell somebody that. I think that, you know, if you're going through a hard time, I think that you need to just make sure you're taking care of yourself is what my point is. So don't feel trapped, right? You've got all kinds of positive things going on in your life. Remember that if you compare yourself to other people in your same, you know, education level and income level and age that might have come from a richer family than you did and don't have student loan debt, right? Or might have gotten lucky with the business or might have chosen an easier state in which to do whatever it is that you do from a income perspective. And so they've got lower housing expenses and higher incomes because of that. You can always find somebody that's above you income-wise and lifestyle-wise, right? You know, and that's a real dangerous thing. So what you want to think about is how great of a situation do you have? Actually better than you think, right? Because student loan debt does not need to be this obstacle towards you having a retirement one day. And why is that? Remember, you're probably making more money or you're more secure than other people from a financial perspective. And then you've got to realize that you've got more loopholes and tools at your disposal to handle the student loan debt than you ever dreamed you possibly could, right? Things like deferment, forbearance, taking out more debt, taking on debt for your kids, strategically getting your income lower, filing taxes different ways. So there's just more choices out there than you've ever dreamed possible to get that fixed expense of a student loan as low as possible. And when that fixed expense of student loans is as low as possible, then you can think about not needing as much to be able to retire because you don't have to have as much to be able to retire. So you can focus on things like minimizing your housing costs, car costs, health insurance, making sure that you're prepared for any kind of unexpected shocks that happen in life. And then it's all upside. It's all positive stuff. It's all stuff that is going to get you to your goals, your dreams, the stuff you enjoy doing much faster. And ultimately, that's really what it's about, right? Is whatever you want your best life to be, whatever your value system is, whatever you think that you want to try to achieve in life, that should be available to you. And the student loan debt should just be a tool in getting you there. It shouldn't be an obstacle that gets in the way. A lot of things going on, obviously. I have no idea how our booking calendar is going to look like for Student Loan Planner going into 2024 with the payment pause ending. It's been 3.5 years since a lot of people have had to pay. I think a lot of people are going to wake up and think about student loans for the first time in a long time. So that could potentially put us into a several month waiting period to get an appointment like we had during the ending of the PSLF waiver. So a couple thoughts, right? You've got all these rules that are coming out. You could schedule for a month or two in the future if you're planning on doing a student loan consult. So you can go to studentloanplanner.com/book if you want to do that. You can also get a follow-up appointment at that same link. The new repay plan is going to be a really big deal. There's all kinds of stuff to know about that plan, as well as the ones that already exist, as well as when that plan will become effective and available, as well as what would the possibilities look like of that plan being eliminated, and what would that mean for your payment strategy. So there's just a ton of stuff going on that if you need a plan, obviously we're available for that. A couple other things to tell you about that I'll preview here, and then I'll tell you more about it later. We have launched two companies in the past couple years, additionally to Student Loan Planner they're basically part of Student Loan Planner, but they're sister companies. So one is SLP Insurance. So that is, we made that just because I felt like if we had access to all the best discounts for disability insurance, and we also have the knowledge of student loans to make sure that you don't buy more insurance than you need, right? Because we understand that a lot of times the student loan debt is not really a debt, it's just a tax, and it's just, you know, that tax is dependent upon your taxable income. So if you became disabled, you wouldn't have to worry about student loans as much, right? So you don't need to buy as much disability insurance. So that's why we launched SLP Insurance for primarily people in the medical space who mostly buys this. So physicians, dentists, veterinarians, nurse practitioners, PAs, pharmacists, et cetera. So this is own occupation coverage. If you need a quote, go to studentloanplanner.com/insurance. So a lot of times there's a little bit of fear mongering that says you've got to buy a policy by June 30th or you lose all the training discounts. You might lose a couple, but most people are not going to lose those full discounts until something like later, like closer to the end of the year. So there's still a lot of time if you need a quote. go to studentloanplanner.com/insurance. You can fill out our quote form, and then you can book a link to talk with one of our insurance specialists just to make sure you've got the right coverage so that there's no downside, only upside from an income and financial planning and financial independence perspective. And then the other thing that I wanted to tell you about is we have decided to launch a fiduciary financial planning company. So I have been thinking about this for a long time. I wanted to do this for years, but I didn't. Why? I just really like student loan planning. I really like how our team can come in an hour and just transform somebody's life and then move on to the next case. And I think that's really powerful and it's really fun. But I also think that we had tons of clients asking us for more. And I think that there's this interesting world of sort of craft beer, right? Which is your fiduciary planners that are running one or two person shops and they're really small and great and good at expertise. They're more expensive, right? So they might charge a few hundred dollars a month, or they might charge 1.5% of your portfolio or something like that, but they're also decent. So those are options, right? But a lot of times, those folks, for business reasons, have to gravitate towards people who can afford to pay for their services. A lot of those planners are amazing. I'm not saying they're not, right? I'm just saying a lot of times there's not a fit there for what people need. And there's also a lot of these like robo-advisors out there in the world. So there's Betterment, Schwab, Vanguard. It seems like every time you turn around, there's some large company that's offering financial advice for some sort of very small subscription fee. But what matters is getting the value out of it. What matters is being able to actually like do the financial planning, do the investment management, get the advice on this company versus that company, this fund versus that fund, this retirement account versus this brokerage account, and then also integrate it with like student loans and tax planning and all that stuff. And you're not going to get that for, any of these big sort of one size fits all types of financial planning services. So ultimately I thought, okay, well, those are some reasons that it's needed, but do we want to do it? So basically the compliance for running a financial planning firm is terrifying. It's a lot. It's really stressful and just, it just really raises the cost a lot of the service, frankly, because if you have to spend dozens of hours and thousands of dollars just, answering some sort of compliance stuff, right, from the government, then you're going to just have to go after larger dollar clients, larger revenue clients. And then what that does is just make it a lot harder for people to get financial advice, especially if you're just starting out. So what we realized is because the size of Student Loan Planner, we were essentially able to get registered directly, our financial planning firm, SLP Wealth, we were able to get that registered directly with the federal government instead of having it be regulated by a bunch of different states, which would have been a nightmare. So I decided, okay, let's do this. And so we launched it just to Student Loan Planner clients, and we got booked for 3 months. So I'm sharing this because there's not any spots really available until August right now. We're really kind of only opening it up for now to like Student Loan Planner clients. We did a little bit of a promo discount for Student Loan Planner clients recently, and we had several hundred people sign up. So that's pretty exciting. We hope to offer better availability for onboarding new clients very soon. And we might even offer a special promo for people who listen to our podcast specifically. So listen out to future episodes for that. SLP Wealth is the name of the financial planning firm. And we still love other financial planning firms out there that we partner with. We are not trying to take away clients from anybody. We're just trying to offer an additional service that people really need. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about SLP Wealth for a lot of different reasons. We've spoken to more people in more professions than really almost any financial planning firm. We have better, really profession-specific advice than the vast majority of firms. Not all, but the vast majority of firms. We know a lot more about dentists and physicians, for example, than a lot of firms that hold themselves out as specializing in those. And that's just because we've worked with 1,000 dentists in one-on-one student loan planning and have information on how their practices are run, income, debt, how they're saving for retirement, what they have available there, how they're doing their taxes, right? We know a lot of this data from our student loan planning service. So I think that's going to make us really exceptional in doing financial planning. And we're already doing that for a lot of people and so far getting really good feedback. So we'll have a whole episode, I think, where we will introduce SLP Wealth and talk about it and talk about why we're doing it. But hopefully you're getting excited about that because it's something that people have asked us for a long time. And it's something that we're really excited that we're finally starting to offer it. A lot going on in student loan planner world, but I hope that you found today's podcast interesting. Remember that really your education is just giving you all upside for your future. You don't have to worry about the debt. You don't have to worry about a lot of these things that impact people in terms of money anxiety. And we're really excited to be able to serve you in a variety of different ways, from student loan planning to ongoing financial planning if you need it, to getting the best coverage for things like disability insurance or professional or doctor mortgage too. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. I'm Travis, and I hope you have a great week.